Because if I had been able to choose the right moment for my first child myself, it certainly would not have happened at that time. In the meantime, I regularly received requests from television for various programs. However, I had now developed a firm idea of what I would like to do if I wanted to work with this medium more often. But none of the offers matched my idea. My vision was to show people in a simple way that there is life after death and that you don't need to be afraid of dying because the soul actually lives on. It was important to me that people see that contact with the deceased doesn't have to be something occult or mystical and that it can be very helpful in dealing with personal grief. I wanted to give people back help and take away their fear. But none of these requests had much to do with my vision, so I turned them down. Somehow I also felt that one day the right time would come for my dream. I just had to wait and until then overcome the challenges that were already waiting for me. Because they were supposed to prepare me for the realization of my vision, which I wasn't aware of at the time. One of these challenges was an offer that once again involved my gift and the search for missing people. They wanted to use missing people to test the extent to which my ability could help in the search. It was designed as an experiment. After the first phone call with the editor, I was convinced that it could be a good show, but I still felt an inner resistance to it. I formulated very clearly what could and could not be expected of me and how the makers of the show could best deal with the topic, since I had now gained some experience in this area. The editor and I were on the same wavelength and I had the feeling that he had understood what it was about and what was important. However, I did not realize that the editor had little say in the actual implementation. When I finally finished recording the show, I gradually understood why I had felt this inner resistance from the beginning. I had been presented with four missing persons cases, and the presenter only gave me the first name of the missing person. Then I began to tell what I had noticed about this person. Upon request, the presenter gave me a photo of this person and I continued. I had no more information about the cases, but that was what had been agreed. In the second step, I spoke to the relatives of the missing people and they could ask me questions. Up until that point, everything had gone as planned. But the producers of the show, unlike the editor, were only out to test me. They had no interest in really helping people who were missing someone terribly. The fourth missing person was a fabricated case that did not actually exist. They had taken a photo of a colleague, invented a first name and made up a story about it. An actor had also been hired to pretend to be the sad relative. It was actually no surprise to me, as my spiritual helper had told me weeks before the recording, "They are going to test you. There will be a case that doesn't exist." I found that exciting and knew that I could rely on my feelings. So I was sure that I would somehow sense it as soon as something was wrong. But it turned out completely differently than the makers of the show had imagined and planned. They expected me to say, "This case doesn't exist," after they had given me the fictitious first name. But since the spiritual world is not a mechanical system. When I was asked whether the woman was a woman who fulfilled our expectations, it happened like this. The presenter asked me, "Are you ready for the next experiment?" And I answered him yes. The next moment, the first name Monica, name changed, popped into my head and I even said it out loud. I described feelings that I associated with this name without having received any information from the presenter beforehand. At that moment he should have stopped the experiment, but he just looked to the production manager for help, who gave him a sign to continue. So he showed me the photo and I said, "Yes, that is the woman I see in my mind's eye." He told me that on his piece of paper there was a different first name than the one I had told him. The name he then told me didn't match my feelings at all and I hesitated for a moment. I decided to stick with the first name that I had in mind for the rest of the experiment. The program was edited and broadcast, and unfortunately my spiritual helper was right. He told me, when I was on my way back from filming, that they hadn't realized what great material they had in the can. I left it at that, and it wasn't until a year later that I realized what had actually happened. After the show was broadcast, I was initially confused and doubted my ability. But then I gradually got confirmation that I hadn't been mistaken about how it had been portrayed in the show. By chance, I received crucial information from the editor in charge, which suddenly cleared up the whole thing. We talked about the show again, which had been a year ago, and I could sense his dissatisfaction with the way it had gone. He said to me, "Now I can tell you how the fabricated case came together. We took the photo of our employee Monica, invented a name and story, and hired an actor." He mentioned the colleague's name rather casually, and we ended the call. Afterwards, I went into the forest with my dogs and reviewed the conversation again. And then it suddenly dawned on me. It was exactly the first name that had popped into my head after the moderator asked me if I was ready for the last experiment. This means that I told him the first name of the real person who was pictured in the photo without even having seen it, namely the employee Monica. The feelings that I had described belonged to her. Since this employee was alive, her energy was naturally the strongest, and I thus received a lot of information about her as a person. Of course, I did not have the feeling that this case did not exist, because she existed in flesh and blood. This means that they should have stopped the experiment at that moment because I had already revealed the true identity of the woman in the photo. But this employee did not want what was going on in her emotional world to be shown on television. So they had to edit it in such a way that it could not be proven that people with psychic abilities can help in the search for missing people. When I realized all this, I was incredibly angry at first and didn't want to believe it. But then I realized that I can rely completely on my perception and the spiritual world. The gift that I had received in this way was phenomenal. It was the gift of regaining inner security and strength. Today I just think it's a shame that this situation was not clarified in the course of the program, because that would have proven that cooperation with the spiritual world works. But in retrospect, I also know that this program was about something completely different than helping people. They helped me anyway, because since this realization I feel even stronger in what I do and how I do it. I have now come very close to realizing my dream and am benefiting from all the experiences I have had to date. I have now found the right people who have the same motivation as me, and so we are all pulling together. I am very excited to see what life still has in store for me and what services I can still provide to people and the spiritual world. I am happy for every experience that has allowed me to grow and continues to do so, and I feel so infinitely blessed. I am especially grateful to those who made things difficult for me, because they have enabled me to develop the most. I hope to be able to make a difference in the future too, and I am very happy about that. Up. After initially feeling that my mediumship was a huge burden and a stigma, I am now glad that I think differently about it today. It is a gift that God has given me, and that is exactly how I feel about it today. 2. Answers to questions that are frequently asked. During my many years of work as a medium, I have been asked certain questions again and again. In this chapter, I briefly comment on the respective topics. Are the deceased well in the afterlife? In principle, the deceased are well in the afterlife. However, we must not imagine a material place. Categorizations such as good or bad do not exist there. Rather, one is in a neutral state that allows the soul to reflect on and process the past life. Should we let the dead rest? Life in this world and in the afterlife are based on the same principle, the principle of free will. This means that if you want to make contact with the soul of a deceased person, this connection will only be established if all those involved actually want it and do so of their own free will. Coercion and pressure will not achieve anything here or there. How can you imagine the afterlife? The afterlife is a kind of neutral zone. It is not far away from our material world, but rather wherever matter ends. The spiritual world exists parallel to the material world, it is just a little more transparent. Strictly speaking, it is just one step away. When can you make contact with the deceased? Basically, contact with the deceased is possible at any time, regardless of whether they died a long time ago or only recently. However, There are souls that need more time than others to arrive in the spiritual world. For example, if a person was given morphine for a long period of time before death or was seriously ill, it can take a while before they are available for a clear connection. They then simply need a certain recovery period. What language is spoken in the afterlife? There is a kind of universal language in the spiritual world. It works on the basis of thoughts and feelings. Just as thoughts are transmitted in our human body in the form of electrical impulses, one can also imagine the exchange of information in the spiritual world. The information is also sent out in the form of electrical impulses and received by the energy field of the other soul, where it is converted back into information. Do animals also have a soul? All material life has an energy field that is generally called a soul. This means that animals and plants also have a soul. However, there are different forms of it. For example, schools of fish have what is known as a collective soul. They share a common energy field. Dogs, horses, cats, etc. each have an individual soul with a single material core, just like humans. Can the deceased give signs? There are various ways in which the deceased can make themselves known. One of these is the dream level, for example. Though they can communicate with us easily, as our minds are taking a break. Electrical devices, especially lamps, often react to the energy field of the deceased, for example by turning on and off without you having touched a button. The deceased can create the individual smell that they had when they were alive and sometimes even move objects. The way in which the soul can draw attention to itself depends on the state of consciousness of the soul. What do the deceased do all day in the afterlife? Since there is no time and no space in the spiritual world like there is here, this question does not even arise. The deceased are simple and can experience many years of our local calendar as a brief moment. And yet there are things that the deceased can do in the afterlife. They can reflect on their life, develop into a spiritual helper for another person, but not for a relative, or grow spiritually in other ways. Do the deceased see everything that we do? The deceased do not see us as we see. We humans primarily have our physical senses at our disposal, and we use them to perceive ourselves and our surroundings. The deceased, on the other hand, use the so-called light senses. They feel us, can perceive us on a thought level and see our energy field, which is not possible for most people during their lifetime. Can the deceased say anything about the future? The future is what we create ourselves today in the present through our thoughts and actions. It is not certain what will happen until we decide something or let others decide. This means that the deceased cannot make a binding statement about our future events whose outcome is not yet decided. Can the deceased lie? The deceased cannot lie in the same way that we humans can. There are those who want to sugarcoat one thing or another, but a good medium should be able to sense the difference when a deceased person tries to make a matter more suitable for themselves in order to look better. Can everyone connect with the spiritual world? Basically, everyone has the opportunity to connect with the spiritual world, just as everyone can feel. However, there are people who have more talent for it than others. It's like with sports, arithmetic or painting. In every area there are people who have more talent for something than others. And the same is true with extrasensory perception. It's like with any ability, talent alone is not enough. It requires a lot of training, education and discipline. Will someone pick you up when you die? It's true that you are accompanied on this unknown path. Some people already notice someone in the room while they are still dying. Others recognize their companion as soon as their heart has stopped beating. It is not certain who will pick you up, but of course you can express your wishes in this regard while you are still alive. Children are often picked up by their grandparents or their guardian angels. How do you know that you are dead? When people die in their sleep or their life comes to a very abrupt end, it can take a while for the consciousness to realize the new state. With a few exceptions, this does not take longer than a few hours. because at the latest when they see their own body from a different perspective, the deceased remembers what happened before. Some also become aware of their new form of existence when other deceased people close to them meet them and explain the situation to them. Is it clear from the start when you will die? The time of death is usually not definitive. Before birth, the soul chooses one or more points in time by which it could have fulfilled its life plan in order to then return to the spiritual world. Which points it ultimately chooses depends on the lifestyle and whether all the important experiences of being human have been made. Is there a fixed life plan? Before you are born, the soul decides on certain topics that it will then encounter during its lifetime. That is why not everyone has the same tasks or talents. Everyone is equipped with what is necessary to go through and master their learning processes on Earth. Nevertheless, it is up to us whether we feel like victims or creators, because experiences can be made in different ways. If a soul has perhaps chosen the topic of forgiveness for its life, it may happen that it will initially develop a great feeling of guilt due to its experiences as a human being. But this is the only way it can learn the quality of forgiveness. It is up to each individual how they shape the time between birth and death. How one arrives at one's insights is ultimately irrelevant. It is only important that you win them and understand their value. Do you meet other people who have already died when you are in the afterlife yourself? If you have faced life and have not run away from your tasks, the chances of seeing loved ones again in the afterlife are very good. However, if you try to shorten this path by committing suicide, for example, because you think you cannot live without a certain person, this plan will not work. Since there are different levels of consciousness in the afterlife, after your physical death you will sort yourself into where you were with your own consciousness at the end of your life. Is the reincarnation? Reincarnation is a logical fact if you take a closer look at the laws on which the processes in our living space, on Earth, are based. Every winter and spring, nature shows us anew that there are and must be phases of rest in material existence. They are part of a cycle that keeps everything in balance. And since nature is the material mirror of our own creation, one only needs to observe this habitat carefully to know which principles underlie our spiritual existence. After all, matter is only the visible part of our thoughts and consciousness. Cremation or burial, which is more advisable? It makes no difference which type of burial you choose for the separation of body and soul. This process takes place regardless of what happens to the physical remains. However, it is possible that a deceased person may be annoyed. Reacts if a certain type of burial was very important to him during his lifetime and he has clearly expressed this. He can understand it as a disregard for his final wish if the relatives choose a different burial than he had previously wished for. Are there so-called poltergeists? Not all deceased people are prepared to look back on their lives after their death. They find it uncomfortable to recognize what went wrong during their lifetime, how they may have hurt others, and they do not want to take responsibility for it. Then they are somewhat stuck in their emotional detachment process and are not really in this world or in the next. In this intermediate state they can make themselves noticeable to us humans through loud knocking, creaking stairs or many other noises. They just clatter around a bit. Sooner or later, however, they have to accept the detachment process. If you have such a soul in your house, you should make it clear to them that they no longer have any business here and explain to them where their place is now, in the light. Because these deceased people are not really happy in this intermediate level. Can you be cursed? Since curses contain negative, spiteful and jealous thoughts, they do exist in that sense. But each of us has had negative thoughts about another person at some point and wished them something bad. Nevertheless, in such cases we do not usually speak of a curse. Strictly speaking, however, we should, because curses are nothing more than bad wishes for another person that we keep sending them in our minds. The healthiest way to deal with such spiteful thoughts or even words is not to pay much attention to them. Since energy is known to follow attention, We should concentrate on the positive things in life and accept that there will always be people who begrudge you something. There is no need to reward such situations with additional attention, because that is ultimately what the person who causes them wants. What is a medium? A medium is something like an interpreter between the here and now. A reputable medium can convert the information and impulses from the spiritual world into our local language and serves as a bridge or link between the seemingly very different levels of existence. What is the difference between a trance medium and a normal medium? Every type of medium functions like an interpreter or a channel. A normal medium perceives through his senses and passes on what he perceives in the form of a normal conversation. In addition to his senses, a trance medium also makes his body available to the deceased and gives up his consciousness of control in the process. You can imagine this as if the soul of the trance medium were moving away from its own body in order to make it available to the soul of the deceased. A real trance medium then speaks in a different tone of voice, among other things. In contrast, the normal medium stays with themselves and does not make their body available. The information can still be of the same quality. Do you have to prepare especially for mediumistic work? A serious medium should be able to make contact with the deceased at any time without having to prepare in advance. However, if the medium feels more relaxed and better if they meditate beforehand, then of course there is nothing wrong with doing that. But in principle, this is not necessary for mediumistic or spiritual work. The only important thing is that the medium makes sure that they are in the best possible condition. You should never work under the influence of alcohol, after taking strong medication or other drugs, as your perception is then clouded. How do you know if you have mediumistic talent? Most people have the basic predisposition for extrasensory perception, but they are often not used. Mediumistic talent is like talent. If you don't encourage it, it will eventually atrophy. People who have a strong talent in this area cannot ignore it in the long run. They feel that their perception is more pronounced than that of others. It is then important to train this talent in order to learn how to deal with it in a healthy and sensible way. How do you recognize a reputable medium? A down-to-earth medium focuses on supporting, helping and accompanying relatives who have lost someone. They allow the deceased to have their say and thereby help to work through what has not been said or clarified. The medium thus contributes to good grief management. Future predictions or similar things are not part of the job of a serious medium. As a client, you should always pay attention to your feelings as to whether you feel comfortable with the advisor in question or not. Respectful criticism should be allowed, as should critical questions. A serious medium makes sure that no dependency develops between him and the person seeking contact with the afterlife, and makes himself redundant as quickly as possible through good and solid work. Excessive fees can also be an indication of a charlatan. 3. The spiritual world and its principles of order. It is not so easy to imagine the spiritual world, transparent as it is. At least not if you try to picture it in material terms. For a better understanding, it is a good idea to consult physical or chemical parallels. Although most people have never seen the atomic lattice of a substance with their own eyes, they can still imagine it well using a diagram. Strictly speaking, it is the same on a large scale as on a small scale. The laws are very similar and are also relatively easy to explain. In this chapter, one would like to make the seemingly intangible things understandable and explain them as simply as possible. In this way, words such as the afterlife or the spiritual world lose their unnecessary mysticism, which in my opinion is long overdue. The afterlife is nothing more than a living space that the majority of people do not perceive. And you don't have to, because you should pay attention to what you are doing. Strictly speaking, it is a protection so that nothing distracts us unnecessarily from the current tasks that we have to master. Body, mind and soul. Most people are familiar with these terms. But if you ask more closely, it is usually difficult to get a concrete explanation, at least of mind and soul. Many people know the words by hearsay, but precise descriptions are rarely given. It is very easy to get an idea. Figure 1 shows a simple diagram of how the body, mind and soul are arranged and how they are connected. The circles symbolize spheres. The body is located in these spheres. The sphere represents what is called the soul. The space between all the spheres is the same as the spirit. This means that the spirit is everywhere and is available to everyone and everything. The spirit is not material. The soul is located in and around the body. That is why it is ultimately wrong to say that the soul is in the body. It is more the case that the body is in the soul. Strictly speaking, it is the material core of the soul. Why do some circles in figure 1 have a body inside the sphere and some do not? The soul continues to exist after physical death because it is a physical fact that energies cannot simply dissolve. They simply change their state. This state is comparable to the different states of water. It can be ice, water or water vapor. That is why it is also possible to communicate with so-called deceased. The energy field that surrounded a person during their life on Earth continues to exist in the afterlife, with all the knowledge and awareness that the person has accumulated on Earth. Only the body dies. The circles without bodies in figure 1, therefore represent deceased people. They differ from the living in only a few details. They no longer have a material core, body, and no ego, but the structure of the soul remains exactly as it was during their lifetime. The figure also makes it clear that we share the same spirit with the deceased. They do not exist somewhere far away from us, but rather their lives take place parallel to ours. In this world, therefore, there are the spheres, souls, with bodies, and the afterlife is the place where the spheres exist without bodies. The afterlife can be imagined to be somewhat more transparent than our world. Time and space no longer exist in our sense, since matter no longer exists either. This makes it easier to understand why some people can sense the energetic field of the deceased and translate this information into our language. These people are called mediums or sensitives. If you now realize once again that we are all connected to one another through the same space, the spirit, then the word connection takes on a whole new meaning. Figure 1 makes it clear that your own actions must therefore always have an effect on other people and souls. If you imagine the balls as fish and the spirit as water, then it becomes understandable that it has an effect on the others when one of the fish makes waves. So it does seem to matter if, as the saying goes, a sack of rice falls over in China. Ultimately, your own life is always influenced when something changes somewhere else. It is just a question of the force of this change and the time when you feel the effects. This applies to pleasant effects as well as unpleasant ones. The same applies, of course, to matters that you yourself set in motion. Because the waves that you yourself make naturally have an effect on the lives of others. The arrangement of the spiritual world. Every form of existence is based on a system or structure. The same applies to the spiritual world. Even if it is not material from our point of view, it still has a certain density, but vibrates so high that it is difficult for our physical senses to perceive it. With the help of figure 2, it becomes clear how one can roughly imagine this structure. Some people refer to this arrangement as hierarchy, but this can quickly lead to misunderstandings, as this word has a rather negative connotation in common parlance. It is more a neutral arrangement of light and energy. The basic structure of the spiritual world is made up of three primary principles. Two parts have split off from the divine primary principle, the Luciferic principle and the Christ principle. In order for life to be possible at all in the material form as we know it, it needs these two opponents, which create a field of tension. This law is also evident in electricity. For example, energy can only flow when two poles are present. Light can also only be created when a certain tension has been built up. This means that without these two poles there is no movement and no flow of energy. The musculoskeletal system of the human body works according to the same principle. In order for an arm or a leg to be moved, two so-called opponents are necessary, a muscle on one side and another on the opposite. Between these two sides or poles, there is inevitably a middle. This zone is always neutral, no matter what field of tension you are talking about. You can find these opposites everywhere in our material world, hot and cold, far and near, light and dark. Even our globe has two poles, which make all life in between possible.